Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 84, Artivism and the Hive Mind, a conversation with multidisciplinary artist Ash Straw. Ashtra is a certified yoga teacher and lifelong student of Eastern philosophies. She is committed to the use of art as a vehicle for healing. Ash writes, paints, performs, and much more, as you'll hear about. She advocates for non-participation in the traditionally dominant materialist paradigm, non-violent communication, and love with a capital L. Of her writings and activities can be found on her blog, limitlesslightworks.wordpress.com. She's also a co-author with this host for the recent publication, On Behalf of Those Who Speak Different Languages. Ash's upcoming theatrical gig, though it's more like a choreo poem, a living piece of poetry, is called Mother Wit, Echoes from the Womb, Releasing Our Stories, Transforming Our Pain, Reclaiming Our Power. That's April 5th at the National Black Theater of Harlem. The Mother Wit Conference, women of all ages, a safe and engaging environment to give voice to their experiences. This is your host, Monk. Thank you for listening. Welcome, Astra, to Between the Lines. It's nice to have you here. And how is it going this evening?
It's going well. It's going well. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, we actually took a drive and are near the beach, and the sun is
just set
behind the horizon. So there's a mood, and perhaps an inspiring mood. You do a lot of arts, and let's see. We'll start with the nature theme. Like, how much does how much do you sort of feed off of the nature? So sometimes people say to me, oh, you're a nature poet, and, obviously a broad section of arts is not, there's all kinds of inspiration, but do you feel like there's a vibe or something that helps you with your arts that's connected earth-wise or however?
Yeah, that's a great question, really broad. So I would say that a lot of the art that I work on deals with spiritual... social issues and clearing through things that can get stopped up in people spiritually and socially in groups and communities. But personally, if I'm writing poetry, or if I know I'm going to be working on anything, I like to sit with nature. I like to sit outside and get really quiet and and connect in any way that I can. I mean, a practice that I have is like is a deep listening practice. So I'll center in and listen to my own breath and recognize my body as a part of nature and listen to the sounds of nature right around me and move out and listen to broader sounds. And that's really centering. That definitely helps to ground me. And I like to do that. If I get a lot of inspiration for poetry from that, a lot of inspiration for writing from that. One practice that I just started, that I've talked with you about a little bit, that I just started doing. I've been a musician since I was 14, just about 13, 14 years old. I started really getting involved in music, and I realized not too many years ago, maybe 2 years ago, that I was doing so much of my art from a totally ego-driven place. And just recently I've started to revisit music and relearn to play music. And in the last couple of days I've been playing the piano and playing the piano to the birds and in the neighborhood. And the birds, and there's a big pine tree outside of the window where my parents' piano is. And these blue jays have been landing, and they've been poking their heads into the window, not inside, but like looking into the window, and we've been connecting in that way. And I've been letting that relationship fuel what the piano does. So fuel, it's that connection. So I've been trying to feed that connection with the music. And it's interesting. It's like a totally different kind of music that comes out. It's much more ethereal.
Yeah, that's a sort of synthetic, organic, and feeding. I sometimes do that with poems. I'll be writing a poem, and it's sort of like somewhat of a Beat Generation thing, like just writing a poem, and something happens. Like I was at a cafe writing a poem, and a bus went by, and it was so I was like, yellow bus goes by with bright color, you know, just riffing off of whatever's going on, and it's part of that flow. That's a neat process. You touched on a lot of stuff. One thing that stood out to me was a sort of integration of the meditative state and the listening that a lot of artists, you know, tend to be into a lot of metaphysical alternative ways of looking at things, and you know, some integrate that more. But I think that's an important thing for artists as far as tuning in, tuning in, and having that be part of the expression of from whence the art comes. And it reminded me of how much sometimes that quiet time as a writer, you know, is important. It almost seems like sometimes it could take, it's almost like a meditative retreat sometimes, to feel like, oh, a couple of days maybe of quiet before the certain idea or something gels or something comes together. So that's perhaps helpful to artists. Aside from writing, another factor which fascinates me about you, and we've had a couple of, first published a Young Voices. It was a kindergarten through 12th grade anthology of poetry, and then published a book of poetry by, I think she's 15 at the time, Elena Botts, some amazing poetry, and interviewed her and Austin, sort of like a young artist series. So, but now you're 26, so it's like another generation of the artist's expression, and it seems like a lot of younger artists are, you know, people are growing up and having all kinds of exposure to arts. I don't know if it's more than it was, but it seems like things are sort of more readily available. Maybe the technology you know, people can play this, you know, do this on a computer and do some artwork. And how did you get into the multi levels? Because you write, you do theater, you sing, you paint, you do sculpting. I don't know if you do dance, but
absolutely,
you're trained in ballet.
Dance has been enormously healing for me right now, because I'm coming from many years of being disconnected from my body. So I'm coming back into my body, and it's this very same process of like sort of like a whirling dervish, where the whirling dervish is spinning around, and as they're spinning around, the universe is spinning around them, and their center is like almost like a funnel for the spirit to come through, and they can like, it's a process of hollowing out so that you are like, mm-hmm. totally connected, and you can we can all do this through dance, through like spontaneous dance. So this is sort of it's interesting because this is like the theme of the last little while for me, is taking all of these skills that I learned when I was in my teens and early 20s, mm-hmm. and doing them in a new way, approaching them from a different place and approaching them with different intentions, and hollowing out and allowing the spirit to work through the body or work through the music or the art is the intention for all of these practices. Hmm.
So it's like an overriding sort of theme or practice approach.
Yeah.
And now do you have experience or even know, say, you know, you get in whatever it is, some state where you're welcoming that to you, and then is it sort of like, see which track comes out, like, you know, you're open to it, and oh, there's a poem, or oh, there's a painting, or is it more of a specific, like, now you're going to focus on painting, now writing? You know, how does it come through? It fascinates me partly because, I mean, obviously I do editing, calligraphy, but I sort of feel like, as a one-trick pony in the sense of writing. Mm-hmm. It's like mostly, there's different forms of it.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do a haiku or essays, whatever, but it's all sort of focused on, you know, writing and related things, whether it's editing. Yeah. But so someone who does all different kind of stuff, you know, is fascinates me.
Yeah, so I was really, really, really blessed growing up to be able to try everything. And I had, you know, when I was 12, 13, and of course teacher asked me to sing something, a voice came out that I did not know was in there. I had no idea up until this point that I was going to go into the arts. And suddenly the singing was interesting. And then I started to think maybe drawing would be interesting. And so I started to explore that. And then toward the end of high school, we were really, really fortunate. And in the district I was in, that I was able to try all of these things. So I was in like really rigorous painting classes and singing and theater and dance. I was dancing all the time. And they all, it's for me, for my mind, body, spirit, I don't approach them. I don't really see them as different.
Mm, okay.
So I see art as art.
Right. It's all.
Yeah. It's like a huge, and so, I will choose in advance what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, I'll wake up in the morning and feel like I'm going to draw today, and I'll be drawing for however long, and that will be the practice. Mm-hmm. That'll be the artistic practice, but the way that the mind and the way that my being is working on it is the same if I were drawing, as if I were singing, as if I were playing the piano, as if I were dancing.
Hmm.
It's the same work.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I would literally have to stop and think about like how to translate, you know, sort of imagine, you know, stuff. But I'm not going to do that right now because then I won't have anything to say and I won't be listening. But that's an interesting thing to kind of ponder what the what that is. It's almost I don't know if it's sort of like Zen, just whatever one is in one's hand, one deals with. Like that's the tool, you know, the hand is like the instrument and whatever tool is there one uses or something like that.
That's absolutely it. And I've been noticing over time that my paintings or my drawings remind me of my music, remind me of my dance. Like it's all, I can see how like the training in each one is very similar. And then the expression that comes through is also very similar. Like, if I were to look at this artwork and also see this person dancing and also listen to this person singing, I would be able to tell that it came from the same person. So it's like, I think of art as one language. Mm-hmm. And my being is expressing itself in a way that I recognize as an authentic expression of me, whether it's poetry, whatever the medium.
Right, so however, you can sort of like, yeah, whatever you feel like, or, you know, maybe like a baker or something that, you know, now it's cupcakes, now it's cakes, now whatever it is. So it's like, it's interesting, it's sort of all, you know, the sort of function, like the baker or the carpenter who, you know, even though it's, you're talking about different art forms, but there's mm-hmm. still the sort of principle that it's all coming through that one channel in a way that the, mm-hmm. The carpenter could build a little wooden boat, or they could build a house or whatever. So yeah. It's an expression. I guess I can relate to that in the writing form. It sort of depends on, you know, sometimes a haiku talks or an essay talks. So it's sort of whatever is waving its thing, you know, calling attention to itself.
Absolutely. So something I want to say that I mentioned before, I want to tie this back to something I said before, that the intention behind doing all of these practices has changed. So the intention, where it once was sort of like, oh, look at me, look at how good I do this. Mm. Like I have all of this musical knowledge. I'm going to show it to you, all of it in one song, in 4 minutes, I'll show you everything I know. It's sort of like now become a process of unraveling. So the unraveling or revealing. So the it's now about hollowing out. So this is the goal of all of the art now, and I think that might also be a unitive factor in what makes it so similar. All of these processes so similar is that they're all going toward the death of the ego. They're all being used as meditative practices to hollow out the being and to allow other things to come through. Mm-hmm. So whether it's a dance that is being used to hollow the self out so that the body can move in the way that the body needs to move in that time, or so that there can be a deeper connection between self and between big self and spirit, between big self and cosmic self. The all-encompassing, if that's the goal for dance or for singing, these processes start to feel very similar because your intention is the same. So you're always on the same track. You're always following the same thread. It's just that these things are looking sort of different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so sort of like a service-oriented, or, you know, again, that combining the somewhat of meditative or spiritual learnings about oneself and integrating it with one's artwork. And, you know, it's different from this, you know, the sort of stardom and,
yeah,
you know, show off kind of art. It's, you know, it's allowing it to come through in more sort of like, it's almost like a person becomes a group or represents,
yes,
like a, you know, whether it's like a nation or an Indian, you know, tribe, or whether it's just various artists. Like I admire having heard Bob Dylan and Neil Young over the years, just constantly changing, you know, not staying with what they know would be, you know, not being defined by some certain groove or style. They're constantly challenging themselves and, you know, shunning, obviously they're famous anyway, but, you know, what, to me, what they stand apart, and there's others too,
yes,
is that they, you know, they put aside that, oh, this is the groove now, I can sit back and just, you know, just do that. It's like they challenge their own artistic integrity,
mm-hmm,
by doing different things and just looking at it as helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, Dylan is a really, really good example of that. And
sometimes their audience members don't like him for that, but, you know, that's part of the choice.
Right. And sometimes if you look at Jerry Garcia, the Grateful, mm-hmm, Dead, they're like, their audience is very different from an audience that would go and see insert top 40s you know, band name here. It's their audience is going for a different reason. They're, and the same thing with Dylan. Like, you're not going to, you're not like a huge Dylan fan because you want him to tell you what you like to hear. You're a huge Dylan fan because you want him to challenge you. You want him to, like, you want to hear what's up, you know. Mm-hmm. You want to hear something true and real. And that's another thing I would say, I would want to say about these processes is that, you know, we use words like allowing or hollowing out, and it maybe sounds sort of like easy and very fluid, but it is not always easy and very fluid. Sometimes the process of revealing is very difficult. Mm-hmm. And can be very volatile. I recently heard Ram Dass referring to getting to the truth of being as being very volatile, or intimacy as being very volatile. How it has this capacity, like the truth has the capacity to hurt people because it's not the common way of relating in the current materialist mm-hmm. paradigm.
Yeah.
So it's not always, it's like these things that these learned behaviors or sometimes negative behaviors we've cultivated along the way, as we start to shift and use art to be self-revealing, to empty us, it can be sort of like ripping parts of you away from the art that don't belong, that don't serve, and that can be a difficult process. It can be like watching things die sometimes. So it's not always this beautiful, mm-hmm.
yeah,
easy
different
fluid.
Kinds of art. Yeah, you remind me of the good theater or a good movie where some of the best ones are when all of a sudden at some point in the movie or the theater, it's sort of like this little voice in my head will say, this is not just a movie. Like, all of a sudden I'm caring about the character, or I'm crying, or I'm wanting them to do something, and I realize the writer, you know, the masterfulness has literally wrapped me up in this, and I am, you know, shaking along with it. It's almost what I imagine the sort of Greek, you know, originally the Greek theater was the sacredness of, like, it was seen as a healing or a mirroring of reality to wake people up. And so that gets into the activism aspect of arts, where, you know, a lot of art, some art is, you know, to look pretty. A nice painting is to look pretty, or whatever. There's all different choices, not necessarily better. But in these day and times that we're in, a fair amount of artists are using their arts for activism.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you can say something about your personal art, and also your, because when you mention all the arts, it made me think too of movies, because movies are sort of like considered maybe the most complete art form, and in that they have, you know, script, acting, music, whatever, all the stuff that goes with it. And so maybe something about the personal approach to that and activism, and also because you're working on helping with a documentary about a pipeline in New Hampshire, Vermont, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, that's like a way of channeling your creativity. And so maybe, you know, try to tackle both those that I'm posing
at
you.
I heard a really cool term today called artivism.
Hmm.
I thought that was great. Artivism. It's like art that is intending to empower the people who see it. So is intending to break the social norms, is intending to portray people in a way that challenges the way that we are conditioned or have conditioned ourselves to see people. I was involved in the Occupy Wall Street protests mm-hmm. down the East Coast. I visited a number of different camps on the East Coast, and sort of that was that was the work that I did most, was I tried to create these really conscious pieces of poster art.
Hmm.
And some of them went on marches, and some of them wound up in museums, and they were sort of geared toward that taking the art form and the poster art form and trying to like push the boundaries, make them these more attractive art pieces, but also fill them with thoughts or images that would challenge what we are accepting.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. The yeah. picture's worth a thousand words. And
yeah.
Sometimes even, you know, a symbol or an image, yes. a poster, there's some, I think it came out now, it's sort of maybe for the Idle No More, the Native wave of protest in Canada, but it's like a young woman sort of holding up a feather in front of a whole line of military, paramilitary type police force, and it's just, yeah, obviously the fact that I'm mentioning it means that I saw that and I'm remembering yeah. it. It's like this feather of truth, you know, in front of facing, not being afraid to stand up for what one feels. So it's like, yeah, the power of the art can serve as a place of whatever that does. It's yeah. not just having to, you know, talk about it or say stuff. It touches us on a different level.
Absolutely. And to jump right onto that, the documentary that we're shooting about this pipeline in Vermont has been, it was a really incredible experience, especially the first day that we shot it. It was almost as if in a dream, like the movie was creating itself. Mm-hmm. And I think that has to do with the extent to which the people involved really, really believe in stopping the pipeline. The people who are directly affected by it, and also just, you know, sometimes this is the art is doing itself. It just needs us to be its hands. It just mm-hmm. needs us to connect the dots. So in 2012, Vermont legislature issued something that said that Vermont would be the first state to ban fracking in its state, totally ban fracking. And now in 2014, they are sort of on the sly trying to build a fracked gas pipeline through Vermont that's going to transport natural gas, fracked natural gas from Canada. And it's not affiliated with the Keystone XL pipeline. It's its own thing, but there's so much corruption around mm. it, on top of the fact that they're going through a lot of rural land. A number of organic farms are being affected. Mm. So there's a huge push from the community to stop it. And it, interestingly, the political class is, that's from their mindset, that's not even an option. The project is happening and that's it. There are eminent domain letters issued to all of these, all of the people affected, and the plan is to seize the property no matter what. But the people affected have every intention of standing up, resisting, and potentially going into a class action lawsuit to get it stopped, because based on the hypocrisy of banning fracking in the state and then saying that, you know, if you're pushing fracked gas, it's not the same as fracking gas in the state. Hmm. So we went just to shoot some footage and maybe use it for a show on public access in one of the towns in Vermont, in Manchester. And as we were shooting, it just, like, the documentary began to sort of unfold itself. And so then I took that footage and started to turn it into a film, and we've got about an hour's long documentary wow. right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck. I'm looking forward to see that. I saw the teaser put up on the about 8 minutes on YouTube, so it's neat to see, because obviously that's a major thing happening with especially natives, and you know mm. now we're getting into this era of natives and non-natives working together.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you mentioned will segue to the whole thing about the sort of the film taking on a life of its own. Now mm-hmm. that's, you know, you hear writers say, when they write novels or plays, about how the characters start talking to them in their head type of thing. So maybe you could jump over to theater and say a little bit about, you know, projects, your experience with theater, and, you know, if that happens with as an actor. I'm still old-fashioned. I want to say actor and actress. I know that actor is now the word, so
yeah, actor.
I will say actor. you know, what that process is like, you know, again, where it's, you know, I can guess you sort of like let yourself get out of the way and let the character guide you, something like that.
Yeah. It's actually, so the process for me, in theater is, it's heavily meditation based. So I try and hollow out and let whatever has to come through, come through. But oftentimes what will come through is, it's like the framework of the character is learned. So their circumstance is learned, and what they are going through, their objectives are learned. And then my reality fills the form. So once I learn what the character is going through, their background, once I've learned these attributes of the character, I sort of link up my own experience and allow my own experience to fill that form, that character's form. And often, if I'm doing it right, if I'm doing it well, then it'll happen on its own. Those connections will happen on their own. So I'll have, say, a long monologue, and I'll know that I have to get from point A to point B, and I have to tell this story. And so I'll learn the story, I'll learn the arc of the story, and I'll learn the character's background, and then I'll fill that story, I'll allow whatever of mine that needs to come up or that is coming up in the moment to fill that story.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if it's the same thing. It reminds me of a little bit of theater that I did years ago where I remember some rehearsal where it was like the character, put the characters in different situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it was like whatever, the Renaissance time, but then we would rehearse with the character going in to get a cup of coffee at a diner or something,
right.
Something totally different, just to learn to be yourself almost in a kind of transcendental state, to be the character wherever. And then so by the time you went back into the place,
right,
the reality of the theater have sort of, I don't know what it did, but you know, something along those lines is what's reminding me of.
Yeah, I have a specific example that I can use, and I've been involved in this play, Crazy Love, this is the fourth year we're doing it. We were just accepted into the DC Black Theater Festival.
Mm.
And
nice.
Yeah, really, really, really cool. Very, very happy. It's truly a great blessing to be connected to and a part of a piece of art that has such a long life. 4 years is a long time for a piece of art to live, and I think it will continue on and continue to grow from here. So that's a great blessing. But the character that I play is, she's dealing with sexual trauma, the sexual abuse that she experienced when she was 3 and only became aware of when she was 15, and only began to work through the guilt that she had accrued over time of, you know, looking back on this experience and sort of liking it and not knowing how to deal with that. She began to deal with that in her 20s. So this is not an experience that I have gone through exactly, but I have experienced experienced mm-hmm. sexual trauma in my life, so I have an arsenal of experience that I can use. So I don't like pick and choose and say this is what I'm going to use, this is how I'm going to use it, I want to use this experience. For me, I'll be releasing this experience while I'm saying these lines. It doesn't quite work that way. I learn the monologue, and then in real time, just as you were saying, it's sort of like you work it up to enter into a sort of trance state, and you just allow whatever from your life is coming up as you're saying these words to be there, to release itself. And so, you know, one night, like the first year we did it, I was talking about one person. And then the second year we did it, I was talking about a couple different people and a couple different experiences. And like the third year we did it, the redeeming character in the end that I was talking about was my grandfather, and he had like recently passed away. So it's whatever needs to work itself out winds up working itself out after you allow the space.
Yeah, it sounds like
it.
Circling back a little bit to that you know, organic sort of looking, listening to nature while you're playing music or writing and describing what's going on around you, perhaps to get a line, or with the theater, kind of grabbing something that's going on, you know, that at that time. So it becomes like a mesh, you know, the artist becomes something that's sort of, you know, part trained and part framework that you know, and then a part of a spontaneous thing. Yeah. Maybe that's sort of like a sort of a pseudo formula that, you know, would be helpful to people
that is
to work. And so you need both, like the discipline and the spontaneity. Those are some, those have been two of my guidelines for a long time, the discipline and the spontaneity, and not, you know, not to have one be too dominant. Like, you know, different people are different. They like, some like the discipline extra, some like the spontaneity extra.
Yeah.
So we each find a kind of balance there. It sounds like a sort of riff off your experience to plug a couple of the All Book books. One is The Modern Muses, which is a various an anthology of different artists talking about theater, music, writing. It's got a poetry and essays and some photography. It's a whole mishmash of and different artists talking about their own art under the framework or under the auspice, or whatever the phrase is, of the nine muses from ancient Greece, who were, a lot of it had to do with each muse having a different aspect of the arts. You know, most I think more towards leaning towards writing, but that, so that could go into theater and related arts, sort of like, you know, lyrical, comical, historical, tragedy, comedy. So, you know, there's music gets in there too with the lyrical, but you know, it sounds like you sort of have your own personal like muses that are, does it feel like ever you have this, you know, conglomerate, this whole like bevy of muses that are swirling around you, or is it again back to your thing about the single artist just with all these offshoots coming, you know, coming out almost like a sprinkler? There's one hose with the water, but then it comes out like those ones the kids use to in the summertime. It's like it's going in 10, 12 directions.
Totally. It's sort of like when I'm really in it, when I'm really in it, in the creation, often my art has a flavor of me, because there are those pieces of me that I'm working out and letting go of through the practice.
Oh, I think every artist at some level, even if it's channeled, it's totally channeled, that there's still, I think at least there's gotta be some flavor of,
you're still the hose.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you're still the hose that the water's coming through. Yeah. But I don't think of, I mean, I am in meditation also. I tend to connect to a very wide and broad space more often and more easily than to any one particular muse. And connecting to that wide and sort of long time kind of space, that's it allows for whatever to come through. So whatever's coming through is what's coming through.
That makes sense.
And I prefer not to have too much of a handle on it. I mean, I prefer to work toward putting the trust into that eternal, that wide eternal space, and trusting that space is going to funnel what needs to be funneled through. And is going to know way better than I could ever know who to call upon or what to call upon to come through the work.
Yeah, it's reminding me of one of my favorite stories is, I think it's true, of a Zen calligrapher who would just sit in meditation virtually all day. And then suddenly, I don't know the whole process, but suddenly at the right moment, would just leap up and with almost like sort of not karate, but like sort of sort of like karate motions would just whoosh, 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 whoosh. And there was the artwork, the calligraphy. Mm. When you see some of those calligraphy pieces that just have it, they look alive. Mm-hmm. Because you know you can see the energy or the chi of the artist that was going through the artist onto the paper, which is part of the gist to convey that energy. So it's like the actual drawing took whatever seconds,
right.
But the whole process took a whole day and a state of being or hours to get into. So that's what you're talking about, that whole metaphor reminds me of that. From there, the other book that we worked on together that was recently published on behalf of those who speak different languages, we collaborated and came up with a bunch of ideas to go along with the poems and the essays to again, as a form of activism and encouraging people not just to listen to art, not just to watch it and sit back, which is fine, enjoy it. We all do it and we get entertained, but to be more than a couch potato and to step up and peel something or whatever. And do something. So that was a fun project to work on, and again, the collaborative effort is sort of another example of the artist getting out of the way, because it's not just, it's just as much as my thing or your thing. It's whoever amount of people are working on it to create something that stands on its own.
Yeah, something freestanding.
So, it's kind of like we could talk for hours on different topics because you got so many different angles to approach it, but maybe we could sort of wrap up, and I'm not sure how to wrap up, but anything else you want to add to sort of bring it together, or not necessarily bring it together, or what comes through?
Yeah, there's one last thing I want to get at, and hopefully this will help to tie in some of what was just said with what was said before. Right now I'm working on a piece called Mother Wit, Echoes from the Womb, and it's a collaborative piece. It's called a choreo poem.
I like that.
It's a living piece of poetry, and it's been performed before, and it's being performed again with a new cast. And I'm seeing this as well as I'm revisiting music and playing with groups, this collaborative, the creation of a hive mind, which is, it's not quite the same as this, like becoming an empty channel for what needs to be expressed straight through the individual as an individual connecting to a channel, but it's like connecting to creating and connecting to a hive mind. So it's the same idea. You're emptying out so that you can connect with these other minds, these other consciousnesses around you, because as we're walking through space, we are not just bodies. We are walking through each other's like mental, emotional planes, and all of these things have vibrations. So if we can unite our minds together, if we can come together and become one mind, we can like really collaborate and co-create. And so that's what this process has been like. And it's like subtly different from being an individual artist creating and responding to your world and emptying out and being with your world, but to do that for the purpose of creating a hive mind is subtly different, but it's the same principle that I think a lot of people are beginning to experiment with, how to shift from being an individual ego to being a part of the broader creation, all of creation, and being an authentic part, playing your authentic role in the cosmic play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big thing. And it's, again, there's different, thanks for posing so many choices, Ash, about like what an artist can be. Mm-hmm. You know, the individual, the writer who, you know, who cares, he doesn't care what it looks like, what's going on, just get that stuff on the page, he's working it alone. You know, from that extreme to the ensemble of theater and all the places in between.
The book that we worked on felt a lot like that. Felt a lot like the creation of a hive mind. Uh-huh. You're serving a piece, so your ego is sort of like, there's no place for it. It's not appropriate.
Yeah, I that's something I personally aspire to, that to sort of get out of the way. And yet, I think there's a balance. I remember reading something by George Orwell about why I write, and it was something along the lines, like, I didn't agree exactly with the wording, but I agreed with what he said. It was almost like, you have to have a big ego to write, to think that you have something important to say, mm-hmm. and to put yourself out there. And it was like, yeah, I had to stop and read that and admit that, that at some level there is that, thinking I have something to say. And again, I think that's the evolving process of the artist, that, mm-hmm. Over years or experiences, it changes and transforms from, I have something to say to, I want to get out of the way and let the spirit come in or the muses come in, and I just want to be the sort of messenger. So it's an ongoing thing, but I think at any age it's both good, totally good what you're talking about and aspiring to, but also for younger artists too, to remember that there is going to be some ego to deal with, and that can fuel, it can fuel some good art. So it's
totally.
There's no exact answer, but it's
again,
a balance and a dance.
To that, like, if I didn't have such a like big crazy ego, coming up, I would never have like thought myself capable of learning all of these mm-hmm. arts and of doing all of these arts and of like showing people all of this art and of, going into New York City and saying, I'm going to say something different from what anyone else is saying. It's going to be totally what I have to say. And if I hadn't done those things, I would never have learned to participate in the arts in the way that I do now. I would never have picked up a lot of skills. I would never have put myself in so many positions to receive rejection or to receive guidance on what people actually need to hear and want to hear. And I would never have made so many mistakes to know what's good, what's helpful, to mm-hmm. know like what works.
That's great. Thanks for being an example of not just what the artist can go through in a certain age bracket, because that the artist sort of transcends the age, but it does flavor things. But for any all the things you've described and we talked about, really, I think it's good for anyone to think about, for artists, to explore where they're at, what phase they're in. Are they in an individual phase, a group phase, a combination? Mm-hmm. And to approach the arts from those different angles. And people can find out, I'll put the link to your blog where you have mostly your writings and some artwork up, the Limitless Light Works. Mm-hmm. Something.
limitlesslightworks.wordpress.com.
Okay. Forget the okay part, but just the .com, and I'll put that link up. And thank you so much, Ash, for taking the time to talk and share some fascinating stuff. I got like tons of more questions, but that's what we got to handle today. So good luck with all your projects.
Thank you for talking to me and for this. Yeah, this has been a beautiful experience of trying to put the work into words, express it in a real way that doesn't feel too contrived and maybe helpful.
All right. Yes. I think
hopefully
people, artists can get a lot from it, and other people, help them appreciate art more, to realize that art can be coming from a variety of angles, and to sort of identify what kind of art they like better. Because sometimes art stands out as like, oh, the artist is the artist is showing off, and sometimes you realize it is more of the art, and each has its place.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And we'll go out with a lovely song by an artist that Ash introduced me to. Her name is Snatam Kaur. That's Snatam Kaur. And The song is called Long Time Sun, which is quite appropriate as a full circle for this show, as we started with the mention of the beach sunset. So this is Long Time Sun by Snatam Kaur.